You're listening to a special Jedi fanboy podcast on Justice League Gods and Monsters.
Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life. Oh my God, how do you think I'm in control? Oh my God, how do you think it's all for fun? Oh my God, how do you think I'm in control? Oh my God, oh, you think it's all for fun? Been a smile, been a smile on my face.
Hello, welcome to a special Jedi Fanboy podcast on Justice League Gods and Monsters. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I've assembled the iFanboy Animation Brain Trust, Paul Montgomery.
Hello, everybody.
And Ryan Haupt.
That's me.
We are the iFanboy Animation Brain Trust. We'd like to get together to talk about DC's animated original movies, as we've done for the last many years.
How long has it been?
Many more years than I thought this would go on, but still going.
I'll look it up while you do you,
this. This is, of course, this episode is dedicated in loving memory of Chris Niesman.
So,
too soon.
This is the latest film, and this is a big deal film because this marks the return of Bruce Timm, who originated this line and produced most of it until recently. He went away, and when he went away, he said he was not going to be gone forever. He's going to be working on something, and this is one of the things he was working on, which is in Elseworld's tale of the Justice League. It also brings back his partner, Alan Burnett, who used to work with Tim and Dini on the old Batman TV show and many of the Justice League shows. And so Burnett wrote it, and Tim produced it, and Sam Liu directed it, and it is an Elseworld's Justice League story. And do we know what number it is, Paul?
I don't know what number it is, but I know when they started. Are we considering Superman Doomsday, the first of these?
Yes, that was the first one.
2007.
8 years. Think about that for a while.
Yeah.
8 years of these.
It's almost a third of my life.
Spoiler warning. There'll be spoilers if you haven't seen the movie yet. It's better to not be spoiled because there's lots of twists and turns in this one. And let's jump into it, guys. Were you excited that Bruce Timm was coming back or did you not care?
I cared. Absolutely cared.
Yeah.
I care.
We cared. We did. We were excited about this one because the line has gone a little, you know, wayward the past couple of releases and maybe even in the future. Like, there's still some sort of wonky looking things coming out. But no, I was like, this is going back to the source code.
I don't know if it's because what they have been doing lately has been, we'll say, lackluster to mediocre, with a few bright spots in there.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think the average is mediocre.
Yeah.
But I thought this was one of the best ones they've done.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I loved this one.
I did, too. I liked it quite a bit. There's some weird stuff in it, and we'll talk about that. But it starts off with a weird thing. I thought this was one of the sharpest scripts that they've had. Just the dialogue is great.
Great pacing in it.
Really good pacing. They do a lot, because it's an Elseworlds tale, they get a lot of world building in and manage to tell like a blockbuster story.
Ryan, did you hate it?
No, I really enjoyed it.
Usually when Paul and I love something, then you hate it.
This
I know there's some wonky science.
This is the first time we've
it.
Agreed in a while, I guess.
I thought this was really great. And I love Elseworlds tales, so I'm already a little in the bag for it.
Oh, yeah. I think that's, I mean, for me, that was the first major and continual selling point was, you know, Elseworlds. It's been so long since we've had a really good Elseworlds.
And an original Elseworlds, too.
Right. Like I'm not including Man of Steel.
Yeah. but I thought even from a technical standpoint, you could just tell the level of craft in this. I thought
the animation even just looked crisp.
The animation looked great.
The character designs were fantastic.
What was really interesting to me was I was watching it, and after a while I was like, wow, this must be almost over. I feel like I've been watching this for a long time, and I paused it, and it was only half an hour into it. That's how much I felt like we were getting out of it, but it never felt overstuffed. And I love the fact that we got a chance to go back with each of these characters. And we got a lot of quiet time with them. One of the complaints we've had about these movies is that at 70-ish minutes, there often isn't a lot of time for character development or character building. They often just a lot of fights. And the best films of these have had chances to really slow down and spend time with the characters. And here, the very long flashback with Kirk Langstrom how he became Batman.
Showing a very accurate depiction of grad school. We are all very attractive and brilliant. It's pretty wonderful.
The long flashback with Becca, who is the one. So this is, just in case anyone hasn't seen it and is listening, it's called Justice League. It's really just Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, because there isn't anyone beyond them in this Justice League.
But they do call themselves the Justice something.
Justice League.
They do call themselves the Justice League.
But this is not the Justice League you know. So it starts off, as all great Elseworlds stories do, with a slight variation on the story. And so we open up on Krypton as it's exploding, and Jor-El and Laura are about to send out their baby into space, to Earth. And
genetic material.
Genetic material, you're right.
Right, because it's space. It's the version where it's like the birthing pod that they're launching.
And so then Zod shows up and shoots Jor-El's finger off before he can ejaculate out of it, apparently, is what Kryptonians do.
Yeah, all I have to do is add my fingerprint, and then that'll go to your egg. And did he say one egg? I just watched the Netflix documentary on Tig Notaro and talking about like freezing her eggs and stuff and like all the anything that could go wrong and stuff, and like, so one egg, like
Kryptonian science, Paul.
Yeah, I know, they're hardy.
100% success rating.
So Zod stops Jor-El from fertilizing Lara's egg and instead fertilizes himself before it can launch. So instead of having the son of Jor-El sent to Earth, we have the son of Zod, who is then found by a Mexican immigrant family or a migrant family and taken in. And that is the sort of differentiating event in this.
Well, there's a couple of things, though, because like when he lands, Lex Luthor is already like walking with a cane.
Right. It's not like, say, Justice League the Nail, which was a great Elseworlds in which
the
nail
one thing
punctures the tire. That one event stops upon Ma Kent from finding Superman, and then it changes everything.
All the dominoes.
It's a different world completely.
Yeah.
But can I comment on why I loved this twist on Superman in particular so much?
Yes.
Is because if Superman's supposed to be like the ultimate immigrant experience, growing up on a farm in Kansas doesn't really represent that anymore, if it ever did.
Well, it did at one point.
Yeah, exactly. And, and in the Depression, I understand, there was differences in the way kids were raised and a lot more adoptions of abandoned kids and stuff like that. But, to update it in this way, it felt like a Miles Morales sort of thing, where it makes a lot of sense to have the alien also be raised by illegal aliens.
Right.
And I really liked that twist on the character, and I liked that he was dropping Spanish, off and on throughout the movie. It just really, they held to that in a way that I thought they would not stick to their guns as much.
The only sort of disappointment there is that we don't really spend any time with that family at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Although I think a comic came out today as of this recording with Moritat art that goes a little bit more into his childhood and stuff like that.
Well, the Machinima Network was doing episodes of the show taking place in this world. I didn't watch them, so I don't know.
Do you get to spend more time with the gente común?
I don't know. That is Superman's difference. Batman is Kirk Langstrom. You'll know him as Man-Bat in the regular DCU.
No, he's Batman in this one.
And he is, in the regular DCU, he's Man-Bat, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He is a grad student who has cancer, and his attempt to cure his cancer leads him to become a vampire. And then Wonder Woman is, in fact, Becca from Apocalypse, the daughter of Highfather. We'll get to that whole subplot in a minute, because I really want to talk about how great that was.
Yeah.
But that's your primary heroes. And then there's differences, of course, as Elseworlds as go, and we meet a lot of characters. I love that this is a very science-based story, all the big scientist characters in the DCU are featured.
Accurately depicted science of constantly fighting robots.
From one graduating class at one school, like Luther.
Well, they were Luther's boys, right? And you often hear about that. Yeah. Some famous professor has his group, and so you find that these characters...
I can trace my own academic lineage back to, prominent paleontologists throughout history. Like, we all know where we come from. Like, it's a thing in academics.
So Will Magnus is one of them, and Dr. Savannah, and John Henry Irons, and Mr. Terrific. They're all the big characters, and Mr. Freeze, although they're not obviously those characters, but they're
there. Stripes in there, Pat Duggan.
Ray Palmer.
Ray Palmer.
And so all those big science characters are hinging on the plot. And so the plot is really, it's sort of mad scientist gone wrong, I guess, or mad scientist gone mad.
I was going to say, is mad scientist normally gone right?
Yeah, well, you can have a good mad scientist.
I guess so.
I thought this was really wonderful. And even though the main characters are a more morally ambiguous version of the Justice League, I think they were still heroic characters.
It was very much in the vein of the Authority, right?
Like, right. We're going to use our powers to make the world better. But even then, it doesn't really go that way, and they end up having to save the world from worse people, which are... I love the fact that the villains turn out to be Dr. Magnus and the Metal Men.
Yep. Yeah. Well, because I kept waiting for them to say OMAC.
Well, the Assassin Droid, which is kind of like... why am I blanking on the character that can be anybody in the Justice League?
Amazo?
Amazo robots.
Yeah.
And but they also looked kind of like Brother Eye.
So there's a lot of like Brother Eye.
Brother Eye, which was kind of an OMAC thing, right?
Yeah, yes.
So, yeah.
Okay. So I was hoping for some OMAC, but the OMAC...
A little bit like the way they use the Sentinels in the future in the Days of Future Past movie.
Right.
Yep.
A little bit like that. Kind of mm-hmm.
So they frame the Justice League for the murders of all these scientists, and that's what sends President Amanda Waller after her, with the help of Lex Luthor, after the Justice League. And I really didn't want this movie to end. I had so much fun watching it. I was really...
Yeah, I hope they do more of these.
This is such a more progressive world than ours. I mean, we've got not only African-American presidents, but women presidents and Latino main superheroes. It's a really different place.
Although the scientists, not very heroic, Ryan. As soon as the robot showed up, they all cowered under tables.
Not Vic Stone. Vic Stone's dad, who fought him with a sound gun.
That's true.
Until
that was cool.
They did die. But... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Victor Freeze was caught unawares. Ray Palmer was kind of a goober, I thought.
It was funny that I kept thinking I had guessed the plot, but I loved that, and I was never correct about it. I thought maybe we would get a second generation of heroes because Ryan Choi was there with Ray Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
Vic Stone was there with his dad, but they all just died. So yeah. I liked that I didn't get figure it out, which was nice.
I was like, can we get a second movie with Ryan Choi trying to track down those miniature horses that he was working on with Ray Palmer?
Oh, they're dead. Those are mountain lion meat.
I noticed that in particular because I've done some mountain lion research, and I remember like first off seeing the mountain lion, be like, why did you put a mountain lion in there, and why is this the most horribly animated animal I've ever seen in one of these movies?
It's pretty Hanna-Barbera looking, yeah.
Right, it was, and then it eats one of the mini horses, and I thought that was hilarious.
I think one little horse died in the crash, died in the fall. Two got away, and one was eaten by a mountain lion. So there's still... I waited for after the credits for their horse
and the,
riding off into the sunset.
Ryan Choi riding it, and
with Ryan Choi, like he shrunk himself down to get away.
So I thought for me the best little subplot was the Wonder Woman flashback, in which we see that she's the daughter of High Father,
granddaughter. Actually.
Granddaughter of High Father, and she's promised to stop the war and merge the apocalypse and New Genesis together in peace.
Right.
And I loved that whole sequence. I loved when she and Orion bonded, and then
it was like Aladdin. They were like, let me take you on my sky chariot, a whole new world.
And then, at first I thought, I feel like the marriage of the son of Darkseid and the granddaughter of the High Father would be better attended. And then and then Darkseid was smiling and clapping, and I was like, whoa, that's a weird image. And then that's because this is a kinder, gentler Darkseid, because it's Highfather who's the asshole. And the new gods.
It was the Red Wedding.
The new gods have their own little Red Wedding and kill everybody from Apocalypse at the wedding, including
Orion.
I love
when they kick over the table and there's all these guns strapped to the bottom of the table. It's like it's this weird, like, space opera version of the Red Wedding. It was, I was like, whoa. I was like so surprised. Even though, like, I thought I knew something was up when we get introduced to Darkseid, when they're talking about this deal, and Darkseid has like a pretty regular voice for Darkseid.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, but then that was, it all worked in favor of it, because I was like,
And I was like, this is weird. And but like everything seemed like, oh, the difference here is that instead of, you know, switching Orion for Mr. Miracle, Scott Free. They grew up, you know, with their family and came to adulthood, and then we're going to do this marriage. And I was like, that's kind of interesting. And then it just kept surprising me. Like when I was like, oh no, what's he going to do when, you know, Orion shows up, you know, at her balcony? I was like, oh God, this is going to be bad. This is like, this is PG-13. Something terrible is going to happen. And then magic carpet ride, you know, and then it turns into Game of Thrones. I was like, that's so, it's, you know, we've seen so many different Elseworlds tales and so many different, you know, like, you know, with Flashpoint and everything, so many different alternate takes and being like, what if the heroes were dark and stuff? Like, even after all of those, like, there were things that surprised me in this.
Yep.
Like, the Metal Men were interesting.
Like, yeah.
And like, I've been talking about this with people. Like, it seems like Dan DiDio was really trying to make the Metal Men happen. Like,
he loves the Metal Men. It's one of his favorite characters.
I know he does, but like, they've had like four different versions. I think there were like two or three different Metal Men reboots within the New 52.
Yes, yes.
And then this one movie does it better than all of those. It was like, you should use them as villains. I thought Will Magnus is like, I was like, who's the bad guy going to be in this? Because we saw these flashbacks, and then, you know, Luther seemed like he was a good guy, but he was pulling a Lex Luthor. He wasn't exactly good. And then Will Magnus also took me by surprise. It probably shouldn't have, but I just thought there were so many inventive choices in this that, you know, even after seeing, you know, alternate origin stories and the same origin stories over and over again, they still found ways to like pull the rug out from under me.
And that's the best thing that Elseworlds do, is they take familiar characters, familiar origins, familiar stories, but add a twist that makes it really interesting. And I think without losing the heart, I really think that despite the dark overtones, these were fairly recognizable versions of these characters. I mean, Superman was a bit more totalitarian, but even at the end of the day, he didn't take that step. He ended up doing the right thing. Batman was, you know, a more violent version of Batman, a more deadly version, but he was still the detective who figured things out and was very basically Batman. And Wonder Woman was basically Wonder Woman. I thought that was, I mean, that's the best thing that Elseworlds do for me.
Did you guys ever read the Elseworlds where Darkseid intercepts Superman's ship?
Which one is that?
Raises him on Apocalypse.
Which one? Do you remember the title of it, or who do it?
I think it was called Superman Darkseid, or Superman Apocalypse, or something like that. He has like black armor instead of a Superman suit. It was actually, I enjoyed it. I think in hindsight, it probably wasn't the best of the Elseworlds, but it had like, it felt a little bit like Superman and Wonder Woman in this movie were kind of split into those two characters from that book of the Superman Raised on Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
It was very good.
Well,
I'm looking it up while you talk.
Okay.
So let me ask you a question, Ryan. So we mentioned PG-13 earlier, and I noticed when it started it said PG-13 for violence throughout and suggestive content, including nudity. Where was the nudity?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that was Platinum.
Platinum had nipples.
Did she?
Did she?
Yeah. It was awkward.
I didn't notice that.
She was in Platinum 4? Like you were.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Pretty sure. I don't know.
Suddenly you don't know. You had an answer all ready to go.
I was just guessing because like it was, you know, that like form-fitting like design. But other than that, I was – and that like that was what was in my head when, you know, Orion shows up at the battle. I was like, oh, my God, what is he going to do? And it's like – and so it, I was also surprised that didn't
really another – Another thing I noticed that was a pretty adult joke, which I got a hearty chuckle at, was when they were leaving the lab in the Kirk Langstrom flashback to go to the party. Mm-hmm. Will Magnus says that Crazy Ivy is bringing her homegrown.
This one pushed the boundaries a bit, which is good. I always like that they actually use a PG-13 rating.
But it's also like that, you know, we talk about world building. It's like, okay, so like Poison Ivy is also going to school, you know, with these guys.
Is that what grad school is like? Just a whole bunch of crazy robot fights and parties with Poison Ivy's homegrown?
I guess so.
I just remember stopping in that line and being like, that's a really smart way of saying how far this extends without actually doing it. Mm-hmm. It's just a throwaway line, and it's there. You get it or not.
And like having Victor Freeze there and being one of the like being a you know cryo researcher like he was up in the Arctic.
Into thermal stuff, I think.
No, you know, cryo is just thermal if it's cold.
Yeah.
So now what didn't we like? There was only two things I didn't like.
Somebody out there might not have known.
But before we go into that, the comic that Ryan was talking about is Superman: The Dark Side. The Dark Side is the title of a 3-issue limited series from 1998 by John Francis Moore and Kieran Dwyer. And it's like the S in the logo, in the regular Superman logo, is like a lightning bolt.
It looks like the Nazi SS.
Yeah. Okay. And he's got black armor with red lightning bolts on it.
Yeah, because the armor channels the fire pits of Apocalypse into him, so since there's no yellow sun.
I see.
So. The Schultz-Staffel. is what the lightning bolt is called.
So there was only two things I didn't like, and they're really, really minor. I mean, this will tell you how much I really loved this movie. I didn't really have any problems with it. Number one, I just cringed when I saw that Lois was the reporter for like the Daily News, but didn't have any like vowels. Like it was all Internet 2.0'd out. Like she was a webcast reporter, and the name of the company was really stupid.
She said, "Webcast at one point. Wait till you see this webcast." That was the only thing that bothered me.
I did think Padgett Brewster did a good job, though.
Yes. The other thing was, I was hoping we would get some indication of where Bruce Wayne was in this world.
Yeah, that was weird.
I was kind of waiting for that. Diana, too.
Yeah. I mean, Diana.
And I was like, where's Clark? Oh, wait, Clark doesn't exist.
He died. He blew up on the planet. But
he doesn't exist. He was never conceived.
Right. I mean, Diana. Diana, you could say that either the Amazons never left their island or there were no Amazons at all. But I was kind of hoping at least with all the name checking, we would get some sort of Wayne situation.
I guess you could say that, you know, Steve Trevor going to Themyscira was sort of the inciting incident
So he never did.
So like he never did because Becca showed up first.
Right.
So there's that.
I thought maybe we'd see some sort of like the Waynes and their son were murdered in the alley or something like that. But anyway, that is so minor. I just found myself wondering where he was in this world.
I wondered about that, but I kind of like that it wasn't in there because like I don't, they're not important to this story, so we don't need to see. I thought you were gonna say what broke my heart a little bit was Jimmy Olsen with tribal tattoos.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That's three things.
Like, oh my God, Jimmy! No,
he was a waste of space.
I was like, what is happening?
I was a little disappointed that they kept referencing Project Fair Play, which was this project that the scientists were working on. And I was, you know, they showed Michael Holt.
Briefly.
Briefly. But then I wanted that to pay off a little bit more.
Right.
It didn't, you know, I guess it was them helping build the OMAC bot things. But I wanted there to be some, you know, based on Mr. Terrific back in the day or whatever.
They should have called it Project OMAC.
Yeah,
something like that.
But let's get back to Jimmy for a second. Not only the tattoos, you know, let's have some sense of professional decorum, but not go out in the field in a tank top.
Yeah, he was
I'm
definitely.
I'm sure you're proud of your pecs and your.
This is undercover. I'm undercover in the morgue. I got to wear
a workout shirt.
I'd wear this A shirt. Yeah.
So these are such minor things, though.
All right. Well, let's talk about.
Wait, Ryan. Anything
of...
you didn't like?
Well, I have one thing that I generally.
Superman talking in space.
That didn't. I made that mental note, but it didn't actually get that into my written notes because it's just, at this point, I'm over it. If DC wants my Superman story for how that all makes sense, I've got one. I'll write it for you. I had one little nitpick and then one thing that I think is a bigger issue with Elseworlds.
Okay.
So my little nitpick is Kirk Langstrom definitely looks in mirrors and talks to himself and is reflected and...
But he's not a vampire like in the traditional Vlad Dracul style. He's a vampire bat.
I know.
So it's okay. You're saying vampire bats don't have reflections?
Yep, that's what I'm saying from a scientist's perspective.
So if I've got a vampire bat problem in my house, I can just sort of string up onions everywhere and...
Garlic, actually.
Garlic or whatever the hell.
I think that was a very conscious decision to have him pick up a broken mirror in the alley to show how it works.
So he wasn't actually like
that
a
I'm not a
vampire.
Mystical vampire.
Yeah, and I get that, and that's fine. I don't know. It's part of that mythology that I like. And so it's like I said, admittedly a nitpick. Vampire bats are actually really cool. We should do a show on vampire bats.
Sure.
But
let's totally do that.
I saw a picture on Twitter of Johnny Depp nursing a little baby bat that was injured.
Of course he was.
Well, vampire bats will actually take care of each other in the colony. Like if you go out at night as a vampire bat and you come back hungry, like you didn't find anything to feed off of, another bat in the colony will regurgitate their blood for you.
I thought he would kill the one next to him and feed you him.
Nope. They'll actually like throw up a little bit of their blood and they're like, here, have some, because they know the next night
their own blood.
No, the blood that they
blood
fed
that
on.
Blood that they fed on, right? Okay.
This is all disgust. This is not sanitary in the least.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
What if that bat has like hepatitis C?
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Or that white nose fungus, which is
far worse. What was your other one before I get disgusted?
It's a bit of a problem that I have with Elseworlds in general, and if anybody goes out and picks up the Superman on Apocalypse book that Paul looked up,
The Dark Side,
it's a problem in that as well, and it's that these worlds always have kind of an ending in a way that the comic world never does, and it's usually a pretty good ending, and so I'm always left kind of feeling like, oh, so it actually would have been better if Zod was Superman's dad, because then, you know,
the world, it's interesting.
The world ends in a better place than when we began. Like, Earth is safe. Lex Luthor is traveling the cosmos, not causing any trouble.
He's a new Metron.
Right, he's a new Metron. Apocalypse.
Like, that sounds like that's dope.
Yeah, that was really cool.
We'll get to Lex in a minute.
So that's just, and that's just
the nature of the Elseworlds, and the What If is the same way. It's like, yeah, they're going to tell a complete story. You're going to see how one thing changes everything, and also how it sort of concludes itself. Because you
don't there are some that don't end.
Yeah, the Nail had a sequel.
Yeah, but the Nail, even still, then the Nail ended well, right?
Well, that's the nature of it. It's a self-contained story, which I liked about this too.
I like that. I'm not complaining against that. I'm just saying, is there? And I hope, if anybody knows an example, let me know. But is there an Elseworld that ends poorly, where things don't work out for the universe?
What was that?
Who want to read that story?
Me, apparently.
I don't want to read the story where they all fail.
Not fail.
No. You want it to end in like a cliffhanger, like
not even a cliffhanger. It feels weird to me that the universe that we've spent the most time in is the one where things seem not to be working out.
Like they continue, like they don't. I understand what you mean.
Right, they can't ever solve the problem because that's the nature of the serialized storytelling.
Yeah, it's the necessity of folklore.
Yeah, and I get that. I'm just saying I need an Elseworld to balance the scales where if things were different in the DCU, it actually would be worse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not that's not the point.
Just something I'm curious to see. That's all. Do you guys remember the one where Superman lands in India and is essentially Mowgli and Tarzan? Like kind of rolled into one. That was a good one.
They get a lot of mileage out of Superman landing in different places.
Yeah,
It's not a bad thing. It's just
isn't it Tom? That's Tom Strong.
Have they done one where he landed in Atlantis and was raised by like Aquaman or as brother?
Sure, they have. It may have been 8 pages.
He drowns because he can't breathe underwater. Because he doesn't have superpowers yet as a baby. So
you don't get enough sunlight through.
Yeah, all the yellow sunlight gets filtered out.
Lex Luthor was pretty awesome. I liked the fact that he was this. He wasn't evil. He wasn't a hero. He just was a guy.
You reminded me of that old dude from Contact.
Yes. Well, yes.
You think they were going for that? Was that intentional?
Oh well, yeah, I think so.
Is a very smart take on Lex Luthor. Like sometimes, even like within the Timverse, he's just like, you know, mustache twirling, you know, just evil. And I like the takes where he's like, there's this guy who just came out of this guy and you trust him. Like, why do we trust this guy? Like, we need to, you know, there needs to be checks and balances on this guy. And
he slowly goes more insane as he can't get anyone to understand his point of view.
Yeah, there's like, you know, you can go and we've seen a lot of different routes on Lex Luthor. And there's that one coming up that I'm not looking forward to. And but
you don't
I thought
like
this
Facebook
one was,
Luthor?
I don't like the Lex red book? Kids are coming. Oh my god. I think it's just that it's Jesse Eisenberg.
Paul Revere, Thor.
Alright, so we all really like this. We would give this a hearty recommendation. I try to figure out I think this is my top five for sure. I don't really think about the others, and because this I thought this was just wonderful. And it felt really kind of bad for the guys making the films now because he just came back and so outclassed what they're doing with the other movies.
He just like waltzes back in and, you know.
Just bam, just, this is how you do it.
I mean, boom,
there's
this
definitely
is how
like some special sauce happening there.
But I mean like, I just want to talk about like the performances a little bit. I thought the casting was really good on this because... Yeah. Some of the recent ones, the casting hasn't been so great. We bemoan, you know, the Batman, is it Jason O'Mara?
Yeah, like, you could have totally done this one because this guy was very stoic and not emotive.
What I like about this take, though, and I don't know if
but
this
it worked
is,
for the character.
I don't know if it was like an Andrea Romano thing or a Bruce Timm thing or what, but like I thought, is he going to play it differently in this origin story where? And he's still that guy. He's not talking weird because he's a vampire. He's talking weird because he's a scientist.
He's just sullen. Yeah, he's very...
Well, he's one kind of scientist.
We know scientists don't have emotions, Paul.
It's true.
He's one kind of that. And I like that... I wanted
some joke about blood splatter analysis when he's biting people's necks and it's splattering everywhere.
Well, there was that they did have the bit where it's like, he only kills criminals.
Yeah.
Like Dexter.
Just right out of Dexter. Look at that Dexter guy. And Benjamin Bratt as Batman?
Superman.
Excuse me.
He was great.
Very good.
And Tamara Taylor's Wonder Woman. They were all really great.
All, yeah, super strong.
Good It's a good cast, good film, good writing. I was really impressed by it. Really, really impressed by it. Mm-hmm. I assume neither of you watched the featurette for the next film.
I did.
Oh, you did. You don't normally.
I bought this one on disc this time. Good. I usually just rent them, but I was excited about this, and I'm glad I picked it up because I'll be revisiting this.
The big news was that next year we're going to get The Killing Joke, and we'll get to that when that happens. Right. But the next film coming out later this year is Batman: Bad Blood.
Taylor Swift.
I am excited for it because we can use Taylor Swift as the theme song of the podcast. one of the articles I wrote for iFanboy back in the day was my top 10 most wanted stories for these series, and one of the stories I picked was Batman and Robin, the Morrison Quietly introduction of Damian and Dick Grayson, right, and Batman. And this is kind of that story, but kind of not at all also that story.
It's that. There's a little bit of Batman RIP in there. There's a little bit of Battle for the Cowl in there.
Right. So in this story, from what we see in the featurette, is Batman goes missing or dies, and Dick Grayson takes up the mantle, and Damian's obviously Robin, but you also get the first animated appearance of the new Batwoman as well as Batwing. And I think that part is really interesting.
Yes.
I just lament the fact that I'm never going to ever shake Damian from my life.
He's here to stay.
Just never gonna happen. But the
same little kid.
It looked interesting.
Like, yeah, it's like if I hadn't seen the other two, I would be really excited about this.
Right. Although we didn't dislike the last one, the Batman and Robin one.
Yeah, but it's not like I don't think I am ever gonna watch that again.
Right. I just feel like these movies are stronger creatively when they're not beholden to the continuity.
Yeah.
Like, I would have liked to have seen this movie, the next one, the Bad Blood movie, done with different actors, different versions of these characters, not the ones that we've seen in all of these other movies.
Yeah, that was one of the things I think we all loved about this series of films in the first place, right, was that it's almost like a mixtape of different artists and teams interpreting your favorite comics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when you synchronize it across films, then you lose some of that randomness, that spontaneity, that just kind of, you know, things that make it interesting and unique every time. And, you know, you're just coming back to the same thing that you've already seen. It's not as fresh.
Yeah, so I have to say I wasn't completely turned off by it, Paul, when I watched it.
Yeah.
I'm in the point now where I hate the fact that we're saddled with Damian all the time for all these stories, and we're never going to get to see a Tim story at least not going forward. We got the Jason story with Batman, son of Red Hood. Batman Red Hood.
I'm even more worried,
and we'll get to that even later, for the third one, which is Batman, Justice League versus Teen Titans. The first introduction of the Teen Titans to this world, because I'm terrified it's going to be the new 52 Teen Titans.
Mm.
I can guarantee you it will be.
I think the casting is good on this next one.
Yes.
Yvonne Strahovski from Chuck as Batwoman. And Smash Williams as Batwing.
Ernie Hudson as Lucius Fox. Like, those are all good.
Ernie Hudson, yeah. That's good.
I just wish Damian would go away from my life. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day. So those are the movies we're going to talk about coming up later this year. We all enjoy Justice League Gods and Monsters. If you watched it, liked it, or didn't like it, had any thoughts on it whatsoever, go to fanboy.com. That's where you can find a post there for this film, for this show, this podcast. You can talk about the movie, what you thought, what you did, what you liked, what you didn't like, or if you're looking forward to the next films, if you like the Elseworlds tale, if you'd like to see Bruce, Tim, and Alan Burnett come back semi-regularly and do more of these kind of things, tell us all your thoughts at fanboy.com.
Let's get that Superman as Mowgli. Let's do it, people.
Let me give you a quick thought on this. Uh-huh. Just quick shout out, sure. Okay? Big ups to Cary Payton, okay, who was the voice in this of John Henry Irons and Granny Goodness.
Nice.
That's range.
That's range.
And a mugger.
Don't they usually have Granny Goodness done by a man, though?
Yes.
It's usually Ed Asner, but then John Henry Irons, that's Shaq. He's Shaq and Ed Asner. That's range. That's range. That's on your reel. You put that on your reel.
Oh, shut
and
your mouth.
It's Granny Goodness officiating a wedding.
Yeah, that was pretty great. I like that. The shut your mouth was a Shaft thing. I wasn't actually telling you to be quiet.
Also, check out Paul's website and podcast at panels.net and Ryan's podcast, which is Science Sort Of.
Thank you much.
We bitched about Jurassic World, people. You know you needed it. Go check it out.
And until the next film, which is labeled as Fall 2015.
That's right.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan.
You should do a podcast on Superman talking in space.
Could be an and Batman voice and what that would do to your vocal cords over time.
Find a cure for my life, put a prize.